Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I am Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington football team for The Athletic. Do I have an episode for you? Jam-packed. Not one, not two, three great guests to help us talk about the Washington football team, this week's game against the Kansas City Chiefs, what's going on with the big story in the NFL this week, how the investigation into the Washington football lead led to the end of John Gruden as Raiders coach, and some Wizards talk. We're going to get to all that here in just a moment. To help me do that, though, here are the guests, the lineup. Starting left tackle for the Washington football team, Charles Leno. We talked football. We talked a lot about life and off-the-field topics, but we also got into some things pertinent to the team. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy this interview with Charles Leno. Then we got to talk about the game, Sunday, right? Washington needs a win. They're going up against a team that also needs a win, that is also the two-time AFC champion Kansas City Chiefs. Doing that with me, our Chiefs insider with The Athletic, Nate Taylor. A fun conversation there, getting into the ins and outs of two teams that are struggling on defense. But you know, we know that for Washington, stopping Patrick Mahomes is going to be everything. We'll get into all of that. And then lastly, as I mentioned, big NFL story this week that connects to Washington. There's a lot of troubling things with it involving the story. It's also a lot of interesting components to this, including what's happening here. What's going on behind the scenes that somehow these emails that implicated John Gruden and connected him to Bruce Allen when Bruce Allen was team president of Washington. What's going on here? And so I did a little bit of tinfoil hat wearing with my friend and noted journalist, smart journalist, Patrick Ruby is with me. And because Patrick and I connected originally over the Wizards, we also then spent half of our time together talking about the Wizards, where we're both at going into this year, where it's a lot of different pieces from when Patrick and I last talked about this team. Very interesting thoughts there. So a lot to get to, and I'll just talk a little bit about what's going on this week out at the park, but we'll get to all that in a moment here on the Standing Room Only podcast. You know the deal. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you do your podcasting, including on The Athletic. And a quick reminder, you can subscribe to The Athletic. If you want to get a 50% off deal, go to theathletic.com/standig, my last name. You can get 50% off the whole kit and caboodle. You can listen to the podcast ad-free. That's a good way to do it. Other than that, the pod will be here and wherever you're listening to it, and we can keep going that way. But obviously, you know, the more the merrier when it comes to joining me over on The Athletic. Of course, you can find me on Twitter at Ben Standig. And here's a thought I had. It's fun to connect with the people, with everybody out there, the listeners, the readers, people who are just interested in these teams. And so what I thought I would maybe do is, so one reason I'm doing this bigger mega podcast is I'm trying to dial myself back to two episodes a week. For those who don't know, and I maybe have said this before, like the way it's kind of set up right now is like, I'm doing everything. I'm obviously doing all the talking. You figured that. I'm booking the guests on that, but I'm also doing a lot of the behind the scenes stuff, and it's just a lot of work, especially in the season. So while I was doing three episodes for a bit, it just became to getting a bit much. So I thought I would do two. I'm not really going to try to have as long as an episode as this one is. It just kind of broke that way in part because of the whole story here with Gruden and Snyder and Bruce Allen. I felt compelled to talk to somebody, and then Patrick and I had a fun conversation that went long. So I'm going to try to do two episodes a week. But that said, there may be room to do a little bit extra. And what I thought was, could we do a little bit extra perhaps next week in which it's me and a few fans, a few listeners you know, talking, sort of a, you know, off the record mailbag, whatever it may be. So I'm down to do that. If you're interested in participating, send me an email, bstandig, S-T-A-N-D-I-G, at theathletic.com. Let me know you're interested. We'll figure out a day and time next week, probably in the evening, I would venture to guess. But maybe that's something that we could do, you know, get to know each other a little better. I don't know, maybe 10 of us, myself and 10, something like that. So if you're interested, send me an email. We'll kind of go from there. I would imagine this is going to be more Washington football team than it will be anything else. So we'll just kind of keep it in that in mind. Maybe in the future there's something to do on the Wizards front. But for now, we'll just stick primarily with the Washington football team. So hit me up on that. And by the way, let me know if you're cool with two podcasts or you prefer the third. I just, you know, this is effectively third because there's a lot here. But in any event, so that's all going on. And I've got a new article up by the time you hear this on The Athletic about everybody's trying to figure out what's going wrong with this team. I don't think it's that complicated. Here's what's going wrong with the football team. Kind of everything they did in the offseason hasn't worked, right? And because of that, the roster is suffering. So and so is the play. So take a look at that. Let me know what you guys think. All right, so I'm talking to you right now Wednesday night. Washington practice today. They'll practice two more days before the game. So this is probably the last time I'll talk to you on the podcast this week. So what does that mean? A bunch of guys were out today. Curtis Samuel's out. Antonio Gibson was out, but obviously he played last week, so this may just be an early rest. I'm not going to get too worked up about that at the moment. Sam Cosmi, right tackle, out. Didn't see him today, so that's not a great sign. Not actually even seeing him, but right. But on the flip side, De'Ami Brown was back out there today. Limited, but he was back out there. John Allen was also limited, but I imagine he'll be fine. Cam Sims was out there and did not practice and didn't look to me. He was not dressed. At least Curtis Samuel was in his jersey. Cam Sims was not. There was a lot going on last week. I reported that he's expected to miss another 1 to 2 weeks with a hamstring injury. It's, you know, week to week. We'll see what happens on that front. So those are things to keep an eye on. I think obviously the Curtis Samuel thing is, I mean, Sam Cosmi is pertinent, of course, the starting right tackle. They do have Cornelius Lucas, so they at least have some options. The Curtis Samuel thing, though, it's just a matter of at this point, it's like, wow, like, what is happening here with this? With this situation, you know, is it going to be? How are they going to resolve this? Do they need to shut him down for a while? I mean, really, he's bored with talking. They played 25 snaps against Atlanta, when and they said even that was more than expected. That's not a lot, right? Only 5 last week, so you know, really, it doesn't seem like he's that close to being truly healthy. And at some point, you got to have to ask, you know, what are they going to get out of him? It's only week 6, but at the same time, you know. If you have to shut him down for a bit, now we're getting past the midway point of the season and we still don't even quite know where things are at. So we'll keep all that in mind. And with regards to the Chiefs, obviously I talked a lot about this with Nate, so we don't have to get into it too much. But one thing, and I think we talked about a little bit, but I'll just emphasize it at the top. You know, we keep trying to figure out what to do with the defense. And look, nothing may work this week when you're considering the opponent. The Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, they do have some injuries. They put Clyde Edwards-Helaire on IR since Nate and I spoke. So one less weapon. We already knew he wasn't going to play with his knee injury, but nonetheless, that is that. I kind of feel like, though, Washington has used a bunch of five defensive linemen lineups, as we all know. Technically, a fifth lineman, I believe, according to True Media, an analytics site that we have access to at The Athletic, it showed last week that Washington effectively blitzed, air quoted that, 58% of the time, meaning they just sent an extra rusher beyond the standard four. And a point that Nate made to me during our conversation was that, like, teams aren't really blitzing Mahomes. It kind of makes me think going with five defensive linemen may not be the way to go for Washington. Going with a 4-1-6, though, that might work, because right now it's only, other than Cole Holcomb, I don't know what linebacker you put on the field. So anyway, something to consider. We'll talk more about that with Nate in just a few minutes. And then as far as the big NFL story this week, explosive, you know, story with emails from John Gruden, racist, homophobic, sexist, misogynist, a lot of negative things in his email that, of course, led to him resigning. He essentially would have been fired, but he resigned. But the primary aspect was all these things, or a lot of the emails, were connected to conversations he was having with Bruce Allen, and Bruce Allen was the president of Washington. Since that's come out, and since Patrick and I even spoke just yesterday, former employees, I think it's about 40 of them, joined to send a letter to the corporate sponsors, I believe Nike among them, saying, hey, you guys need to pressure the league to put out the Wilkinson report. We want this report public. I think a lot of people do, but these women were directly involved, obviously, or at least many, if not all of them, are directly involved in this, and they want this information out there. Of course, we'll remember last year when the name change situation happened, there was a lot going on in society. We were right in the middle of everybody focusing on George Floyd's murder and what that did to the country, and caught up in that was the Washington team name. When you had when Fred Smith, the former minority owner, when in his role as leading FedEx, they put out a statement saying, hey, change the name. Dominoes began to fall and the name went away. I don't know if we have the momentum at this exact moment for that to happen, but we'll see in terms of this push to get the corporate sponsors to pressure the league to put the report out there. Obviously, the league is definitely protecting Dan Snyder. That seems pretty apparent. Patrick and I will get into some possible reasons why and a lot more. But anyway, that's something that has happened this week. And of course, keep following me on Twitter at Ben Standing, as well as taking a look at what we've got overall in The Athletic as well. And by the way, there's also a DEA investigation still going on into head trainer Ryan Vermilion. We haven't forgotten about that. So there is a lot going on here, including a game this week. So we're going to get to all that right now. But first up, we're going to talk to starting left tackle Charles Leno. A really fun conversation. This guy has really integrated himself into the community pretty quickly. And we had to kind of went all over the place. It was a really interesting conversation. I think you'll like it. Then I'll get to my chat with Nate Taylor previewing the Chiefs game. And then lastly, Patrick and I, again, talking about everything here with John Gruden, Dan Snyder, and the NFL. Plus Wizards, probably about, honestly, the Patrick conversation is about 50 minutes, probably half of the NFL stuff, and then half Wizards. So a lot to get to. I hope you guys like it. Please listen. Please let me know what you think at Ben Standing. And again, if you want to participate in a private conversation next week, email me bstandig@theathletic.com. All right, let's get to it. We're going to have some words from a sponsor, but then right after that, we'll start with Charles Leno here on the Standing Room Only podcast.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right. As promised, joining us here on the podcast, an actual football player, left tackle for the Washington football team. He is Charles Leno. Charles, how, you know, we always ask, I always ask football questions, but let's go personal. How are you?
I'm spirited.
You're spirited. Is that a daily situation for you? You're just having a particularly good one?
No, just spirited is something I like to use when, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm at peace with who I am and the life and the situation I'm in. You know, that's just how I feel.
Well, that's interesting. I'm actually going to lean into that if you don't mind. I've spent, I don't know how it's been for you the last however, I don't know however many months it's now been with this COVID situation, 19 months, 20 months. And I know for me, it's been a lot of thinking and soul searching and contemplating what like kind of what we're all doing, because it's, I think like if you haven't had any, if you haven't had taken any time during this to really kind of get with yourself about what's important or what are you thinking or learn something from it, I don't know what you people have been kind of doing. So when you say like that you're, you know, you're cool with where you are, is that something you've had for a while, or is that more of a more recent thing? I know you've got a family and kids and all that. Like what, when for you did you become comfortable like the way you just kind of said that?
Oh yeah. So, I mean, honestly for me, you know, dating back, I don't know, early in my career, I did a lot of meditation and I still continue to practice meditation. Not as much as I used to, but still definitely do it before every game. I do it, you know, on occasion I do it, but you know, just definitely being understanding at peace with what's going on around you and understanding what you can and cannot control. And I feel like with COVID and everything that's going on in the world, like a lot of things we feel like we have to be able to control and we want to have a pulse over. We want to like feel and know what's going on. Sometimes you just got to let go, and that's the best situation. And, you know, me having a family now, having two daughters and my wife around, and, you know, this is, you know, who I am and my family. Now it's all about them. Like it's nothing. It gets more and more less about me. And, you know, being in the situation I am, like early in my career, I was very selfish. I mean, I'm a football player, you know, I mean, not saying all football players are selfish, but you get into this situation where I have to think about myself to better my career, you know, and it's about me. And now it's less about me. It's only about me on Sunday, but that's only 3 hours of the day. You still get home and I still go back to changing diapers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's something that, you know, it's just evolving, always evolving. And if you're not evolving, I just turned 30. If you're not growing, if you're not leveling up, I have a shirt that says unlocked level 30. And if you're not leveling up in life, then, you know, what really are you doing? That's all I'm trying to do. Just keep getting better. And, you know, understanding the way you get better is just understanding yourself and, you know, becoming a better version of you.
Yeah, I mean, we need to condense all that and put it on a t-shirt, because I agree with a lot of that. Absolutely, especially the control that you can control. It has definitely been one of the big challenges for me in life. But I guess in theory, I have a bit of a public job as a writer, but you have a real public job. Where people are paying attention to everything you guys do and say, and body language is important and things like that. In terms of this mindfulness, I guess we can say, has that, we just discussed how it maybe helped you get in touch with you. How has it helped you out on the field? Is there something that you can see tangible difference as you've kind of gotten into this practice that it's kind of helped you out there?
Oh, absolutely. On the field. I mean, tremendously. I even work with mental performance coach. You know, I think this game is, I mean, some people are going to say, you know, you get the 80% mental, 20%. I even push it up to 90. I even push up to 95. This game is very, very mental. It's all about your psyche. It's all about how you're able to overcome adversity. It's all about, you know, yeah, basically the mental aspect of it. And I feel like if you are better in the mental aspect of it, then you'll be able to succeed longer and further. Talent can only take you so far. Coach Rivera always talks about talent sets the floor, you know, but your character sets the ceiling, and within character is, you know, a lot of mental toughness.
I want to come back to that in a second, but you just in terms of the meditation, it's actually something that I've been doing as well. I started doing it, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, like a lot of things. I then proceeded to stop, but like I picked it up again during this last year, and it's kind of helped me a bit. I think I've heard that Taylor Heineke is also into meditation? Are there meditation is a solo activity in theory. I mean, it can be done as a group, but in theory, it's like a solo. Are there other guys on the team that you also know that do it, or that you guys, is there, I don't know if there's a group, but are there guys that kind of discuss it or do it together, or just so you're aware that kind of do it?
I'm actually not aware of that. And that's a good point. Being part of meditation is awareness, but sadly, I'm not aware of my teammates doing it. I wish I knew. Maybe this will come out and I'll get to know what others out there are doing meditation. But, you know, it's just, I mean, it's one of those things where it's just like everything in life. Maybe it's for you, maybe it's not. But I definitely advise trying it out and understanding, like, you know, the aspect of it and just controlling controlling what you can control. You know, listening to your breath, being in the moment, being present, moment focused, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if this is a good joke or not, but like maybe you blindside your quarterback and ask if he is, because I think I've heard that he has that.
Whoa, don't say that.
I'll say you do it, not don't give it up.
Well, why would I ever blindside my quarterback? I'm the blindside protector.
I know, that's why I said it's probably a bad joke. you know, you mentioned that it helps having a proper mentality and mindset and character can help deal with adversity. I don't know if it's too much to say you guys are dealing with adversity, but obviously, you know, you're coming off the loss, you're 2-3, expectations for this team have been high and things along those lines. And, you know, you win on Sunday, back to 500, and the world is a better place, and it's still earlier in the year. But obviously there's also been, you know, at least on the outside, some bumps to this point. I don't know how you would characterize it, but like, how have you seen from your perspective, you dealing with kind of the bumps in the road to this point, and collectively as a group, how have you seen sort of the mindset, the culture, as it were, kind of dealing with kind of what you guys have to the start so far?
Okay, so for me, I'm very the same. No high too high, no low too low. That's who I am. That's always how I rolled. I don't like to get too high for, well, you know, some wins mean more than others, but you know, a win is a win, and you got to appreciate the win at the time. But I have a quick mentality of blocking that out and on to the next opponent, because, you know, can't, you know, hold on to that for so long, because it is a long season. And no low too low. You know, when you take tough losses, that happens in this league. I mean, it's still what? Only one team that went undefeated, right? You know what I mean? Like, that's only one team that experienced that. But, you know, so you just got to take it day by day and understand, like, as a team and collectively, how resilient our team is. I really appreciate how resilient our team is. I know how we're going to respond to the loss. I mean, I think after every loss we had this year, we won. So I'm not, you know, saying anything like, oh, I'm guaranteeing to win, but I know how we're going to show up to practice. I know how we're going to show up to the meeting rooms. I know how focused we're going to be for this game. And I know that's where it starts. And that's what we can control. And that's what I know we're going to do.
You know, one thing that's interesting I was thinking about the other day, obviously we have not, as a reporters, well, we have more access to you guys this year. We have, you know, during training camp, we were in this tent area that they would bring you guys over to. And now we have our own tent at the facility that you guys have come into. You came in one day wearing a Ryan Fitzpatrick shirt, and that was fun and all that. But like, we still don't have a chance to know guys the way we did when we had locker room access. Like I said, this is the first time you and I've had a chance to talk directly, and, you know, other players as well. There's, you know, some guys who've been on the team, you know, Chase Young has been on the team now 2 seasons. I've never talked to him directly. I mean, I take it back. We did talk about basketball last year over Zoom. I scratched that with him, but otherwise, you know, I mean, it's a different deal. And I always think that for media, we are the conduit for the fans. Right, we're the people who let them know what's going on, whether we're talking about the mood or how to, you know, how to improve something, or just get to know the guys. But we're not there. I think the longer we're not there, it becomes harder to maintain that human connection. And when people are asking questions like, well, what is the mood like with the team, or what's going wrong, if that's the way to look at it, it's not saying we can't assess it to a degree, but it's not as easy. And I'm wondering, from the player's perspective, does it feel the same at all, that like, because we are sort of on the outside and we as a conduit for the fans, it is harder to know us and therefore to get the message across, whatever you guys want to say or think or feel like? Does it feel more of a disconnect now than it did before, when the media was in the locker room and, you know, we had more direct connection to talk to everybody?
That's a very good question. My answer for that is, well, I got two answers for that. One good, one bad. It's a good thing that the media is not in the locker room, because for us being in the locker room, it is kind of our safe space. You know, that's one thing that I know for a fact, like every single locker room across the league, that's our space. You know, we like to hang out in there. We talk in there. Like, that's kind of what we do. So that on that aspect, that's a positive. It might be a negative on your part. And yeah, absolutely, it is a negative when, you know, you don't understand who we are and you're writing a story and you're trying to piece together, but, you know, it's over Zoom, or, you know, you don't have that, you know, we can talk over Zoom and we'll just have this time, but, you know, in the locker room, you can just come by, speak your piece, and then afterwards still hang out and we'll still talk about life afterwards. You know what I mean? Right. So that can give a completely different narrative on your story about however you feel. Charles Leno Jr. might be the worst tackle in the league, but he might be the best family man you ever met in your life, you know? So it kind of makes the story sound a little better. But yeah, I think that's the disconnect that I feel in that aspect of the locker room and media and player.
Gotcha. Well, let me ask you, rather than saying, how do you think your season's going? But let me ask you like this, there are people out there. I'm not one of them. I look at film to try to understand as much as I can what's happening, but I'm not here to break down tape, and I'm not going to put out a report that says, oh, this guy, you know, he should have gone this way. The quarterback should have seen this pass and done that way. Or in your case, you know, oh, how did you miss that block? That's not me. But you obviously, I'm assuming, you seem like you're a guy who's on social media somewhat. You seem like you're cognizant of, I'm sure you've seen people say things about you. You mentioned the idea of being the worst tackle, or jokes, whatever. What's the thing that people don't get? Because I've heard, like, say, Pro Football Focus, just to use them, they're maybe the most prominent grades out there. I'll leave it up to others to determine good or bad, but I've heard in certain positions, they don't always get it, because you don't always know what the call is on the line. I mean, maybe sometimes it's obvious the left tackle is going, but the blocker, but you don't always know. What's the thing when you see people assess line play that they get most wrong?
Everything. Yeah, I mean, it's tough to assess an offensive line play because clearly they don't know the call. They don't know, you know, who we're going to, all those type of deals. And, you know, for example, say the quarterback has to throw hot and he gets hit and it's on my side, you know, a fan or a regular fan or somebody breaking down the game, you know, average Joe Schmo with, you know, all 22, you know, he can say that's my fault, but you don't know, you know what I mean? You're not in the locker room. You're not in our meeting rooms. You're not breaking down the film with us and you're not watching it with us. So it's very hard. But I understand everybody wants, you know, to have that first response to, you know, whatever, somebody's performance or whatever somebody's doing. So it makes sense. I mean, it's part of the game. You just got to go with the ebbs and flows and understand that most of those people, I mean, not most, generally all those people don't have any clue what we're doing. Have any clue what's going on. It's just they want to be a part and they feel like this is the way they can gauge themselves and, you know, promote and also promote themselves. You know, a lot of people are in the promoting business and, you know, if you want to promote your podcast, you know what I mean? I got the breakdown of Washington Football Team Offensive Line podcast every week. You know, that's what you got to do, right? So at the end of the day, it is what it is.
So what if in theory we reversed it and we said, like, as an off-season project, you get to critique the film people's analysis of yep. You and your teammates.
Or I can critique you and your job. That podcast is, I mean, what is he talking about? He doesn't even know what he's doing. He doesn't even know how to have a flow. He has no topic. He has no content. What is going on? That guy gets a D, you know, D plus max, you know, whatever. Like, how about I do that? How about football players or athletes do that to the media?
This is feeling a little personal right now as we're doing a podcast. Now I'm worried about my agenda here. Right? Do I have no flow? Wait, now I'm in my head. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, look, I'm not sitting here. I don't assess things because obviously that's what we all have to do. But yes, it would be interesting to go the other way if that were to happen. Absolutely. If you do that though, could you do it to me? Don't do it on iTunes where people leave reviews. I need positive reviews there. Right. But we can just do it on like some other form. That's fine.
Right. I would like to go down to the I like to go down to the local Whole Foods. I have some reviews that I got to give there. So if I can, at the end of this off season, I definitely will be stopping by my local Whole Foods and reviewing the bag, you know, the baggers and the stockers. You know, I have to make sure they are at pristine, you know, like, you know, just got to make sure they're on top of everything. You know?
I worked at a, as a cashier at the grocery store when I, near where I was growing up. And when you do that, they have a secret shopper that comes in and grades you. And then one day your boss says, hey, by the way, the shopper came in, and then they tell you what you did or didn't do. That was kind of nerve-wracking.
Thank you for my off-season job. That is what I'm going to be doing. I might be popping up in every single grocery store across America as a secret shopper. Thank you.
Okay, well, we're going to have to discuss this. This may be a fun project to discuss. Let me get to a couple other quick things before we let you go. You're obviously new to this offensive line. So is Sam Cosmi. You guys are, so where everybody's kind of looking at you guys, like, how are the new tackles going to be? It's very different. You're a veteran who's a pro, you've been a Pro Bowler. You've been there, done that. He's literally learning the job. Unfortunately, he just had an ankle injury. And I guess we'll see if he's able to go this week, but what's your sense of kind of where he's at? And when you look at him, how do you kind of see your own self, you know, as he's kind of going through some growing pains?
Yeah. I mean, I just know, football player, that's going to come. I understand that. Like, that he's a rookie. He's still learning the game, understanding what the NFL is all about. But as a person, I mean, I can't tell you more about Sam Cosmi, man. He's a great guy. Extremely hard worker, very dedicated, focused, you know, just wants to get better, wants to continue to, you know, push himself every single day. And he has made a ton of strides already. And the future is very bright for him. Definitely very bright. And I think of myself and I'm like, man, you know, just seeing him in the way he's growing and learning still, it helps me, because I want to learn and still grow and get better, because I always have room to get better. I always still have room to learn. So I just take that from him, you know, I heard, this was a while ago, I forget what coach told me. I think it might've been John Fox, because he had Peyton Manning, but Peyton Manning always talked about taking notes, you know, and on the first install. He knew this install like the back of his hand, but he always took notes on it. And he wanted to, you know, learn like a, you know, soak things up like an eighth grader. And I feel like that's what Sam's doing. And I just want to learn like that. That's what makes the players better, you know?
You mentioned earlier that, like, there may be a point in your career that you maybe thought you were a bit more selfish, just because of maybe where you were at that time and trying to establish yourself or whatever it was. How do you, as a player, like, look, you guys are all competitive. I mean, we can be realistic, right? You are here. You've got a contract through the end of the season, and hopefully everything works out and you either stay or you get a better deal or whatever it may be. Sam Cosmi's a younger guy. In theory, he could be moved to the left side if that were to be somebody wants to do. But how do you, now your teammates, you're trying to win games. So at what point did you kind of flip, if you needed the flip, to go from being selfish to, okay, I need to help this guy, regardless of whether maybe we're sort of competing on some level, but we're not today. Today, we're both striving for the same goal to win games. How do you do that as an athlete? Because I do always think that's, like, sort of a interesting dynamic. Like, Favre and Aaron Rodgers was like a bigger one, things like that. But how do you deal with things like that?
So for me, it's really easy, honestly. I have a philosophy. I got it from a movie, Paid in Full. You ever seen that movie before? I don't know if you have.
I haven't, but I'm aware of it.
Okay. Well, he says, everybody eats, B. That's what he says. Like, you know, everybody eats. And that's one of my favorite sayings, because if everybody eats, then we're all winning at the end of the day. You know, so I look at it as, I want this person to be the best person they possibly be, the best athlete they can be, the best football player they can be. Because if something goes wrong, you know, on the field, we will need them, you know? And that's what I want. That's why I want to help guys like Sam and Sadiq. I'm always helping out guys like that, just so they can get groomed along the way. So if anything goes wrong, they'll be ready. You know, you never want to get ready. You want to stay ready. You know what I'm saying? So I just want to make sure they're prepared, and always just let them know mentally, like, you know, just stay in it. you know, because you never know when your time's going to be, because I was that player one time, you know, where I had to get thrown into the, you know, thrown into the game, and, you know, I'm wide-eyed and I'm like, oh, snap, I'm here now. And, you know, I don't want anybody to be caught off guard like that. I want them to be able to understand, like, prepare your tail off like you're a starter every single week. Because if you do that, then everybody wins, you know, that's the team wins, you win, I will be fulfilled because I'm looking at somebody I helped out. You know, what better story is, you know, you helping somebody out and they come in and they succeed, you know, that's a feel good thing, you know, because you help them grow along the way.
I want to ask you about your charitable endeavors before I let you go, but quick, I ask people a couple like fun, silly questions. We'll go through them really quick. Painless, I promise. You are a social media guy. You're on Twitter. Who is somebody on Twitter that you wish followed you that doesn't? Like I, my jokey answer, but sort of serious, is like Rihanna.
Rihanna, no, I'm married. I'm cool with Rihanna. I got two people.
I'll let you have it.
Dave Chappelle, if he was on Twitter, I don't even know if he is, and Larry David.
Those are two people I don't actually know if they're on Twitter. Dave Chappelle's a DC guy, so that, I mean.
They definitely need it, though. I mean, yeah. Imagine you get a tweet every day from Dave Chappelle and Larry David, you know, and I just want that. You know, I just want that in my life, you know, just to see what they're thinking for that day. Dave Chappelle wakes up and he tweets something. You know it's funny, but you know it's going to be real. Same thing with Larry David. They're going to speak their mind, but it's going to be funny. You know, I definitely want that from some people.
100%. Yeah, like I said, Dave Chappelle's a local guy. I don't actually know if he's a football, if he's a Washington football team fan or not, but he is from here. Yeah. He doesn't live around here anymore, but he's still around here. I'm out. Anyway, I respect that. There's a new season of Curb coming up. I just saw an ad for that, so I'm excited for that. Based on a hobby or a habit, what Hall of Fame could you qualify for?
Leg shaking.
Leg shaking. What does that mean?
I shake my leg a lot.
Okay. It's like a nervous habit thing, or?
It's just like a thing I've been doing for a long time. I don't know. My wife hates it, but, you know, we're still together. This might be the thing that, you know, separates if she ever wants to take it that far, but it's a habit, you know. Sorry, I'll win the Hall of Fame because I do it probably more than anybody you ever know.
Well, I assume you can control it on the field, or you might get a false start penalty or something.
I got a false start off of that before.
Really? When was that?
No, I'm
okay. You're good. All good. If Dave Chappelle's here, I'm going to let him go blue. You can certainly say that. Last thing, I mean, you only got here this summer or whatever that was, right after the draft. But you quickly integrated yourself with the community. You have been very active from what I can see with the fans, with your charitable work. But tell everybody kind of what prompts you to be that active, and what are some of the things that you and your wife, Jennifer, have been kind of doing in the community?
What prompts me is just understanding where I came from. Oakland, California kid. I remember not having much. And I remember, you know, going to like the Raider facility and the way they gave back, you know, I did that. We had like a bus trip there. And I saw the charitable works they did. And I was like, if I ever get the opportunity, I always want to give back to the community I am and my community. So that's just something that's been a part of me, you know, since I've been in Boise, I did a lot of charitable work out there too. You know, but, you know, in the league, you can make an even bigger impact. And that's just something I want to do, just leave a lasting impact and make sure the youth understand that there is, you know, good role models out there and people who want to see you succeed. And some other things that we're going to be doing, you know, later on, we got Halloween coming up. We'll be doing some Halloween things. I mean, every season, the Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, we got things rolling, and we might be sprinkling in some other fun ones around, you know, around the season. You know, I just want to make sure that, you know, people understand I am the type of person that always loves to give back because it means so much to me. You know, it means a lot to see, to put a smile on somebody's face for that day. You know what I mean? That's just something I want in life. I just want everybody to be happy. I want a utopian society, and never will get there, but I'll try. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's, yeah. If everybody can just try. That's you can't. We may not get to the ultimate goal, but if we're not going to get there, we don't try. Charles, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for the time. Good luck this week against the Chiefs. At least you don't have to deal with Patrick Mahomes. You get to watch him, but you don't at least have to chase him around. So that's a good thing. Appreciate it. Thanks again.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right, as promised, joining me here on the podcast to help preview this interesting week six game. Is it interesting? I don't know. I guess it's interesting because it's interesting, if nothing else, because of the opponent for Washington, the beasts of the AFC in recent years who are not looking as mighty as they have been, at least at the moment. He is our Chiefs insider, Nate Taylor, at By Nate Taylor on Twitter. Sir, I appreciate the time. We're both having interesting years. I think the team I cover is not where they expected to be. No chance. The team you cover is where they expect to be. What's the mood at this moment in Kansas City?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ben. It's a little bit of a panic here in Kansas City, and I would tell Washington fans that the mood here in Kansas City is kind of, you know, a disbelief in how poorly this team has played over the first 5 weeks of the season. If people take nothing else from this, it's that the Chiefs probably should acknowledge to themselves, Ben, that they're not as good as they think they are. We have a large enough sample size. We're five games in. They have arguably the worst defense in the league. And their high potent offense has made so many errors on their own in terms of turnovers that neither side is truly playing complementary football. So this game is interesting just because the Chiefs really, really need it because they are dead last in the AFC West, which is, again, a surprise. But I do think this game can be competitive in a way for Washington that, yes, even though it's early October, teams may still be like, or people, I should say, may still be like, wow, like how is this game close in the fourth quarter? And my thought process is that's probably what I'm going to expect all year from Chiefs games is that they'll probably be close. And if they are dominant, they will have had to really make steady progress in terms of improvement all year long.
Didn't that kind of happen last year? Like, I'm not sure about it from like a betting perspective, but like, it felt like as somebody who, you know, looks at lines and mm-hmm. plays some fantasy football, I was always like, boy, Kansas City is like not blowing people away, that Mahomes is having to do some magic late in games. But then once they got to the playoffs, obviously it was like, oh, okay, here they go. And they make the Super Bowl again. Right. I mean, that was sort of happening a little bit last year, but now it's just more pronounced in there. You know, they don't have the firepower, especially on defense, to do enough to get things going so far.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, last year they were so much better than everybody that just about this point in the season last year is when they started, I think, to play bored or to flip the switch, which doesn't help anybody if you're gambling on the most dominant NFL team to say like, hey, can you win by more than one score? They didn't last year. They won a lot of what you could describe as close games based on the box score, but there were times where they really turned it on against the Saints, against the Dolphins. I mean, these are teams that, you know, they blew out Tampa Bay before really basically taking their foot off the gas in the second half. They were a team that knew they were champions, that knew they could really, when the moment was right, sort of take control of the game on offense or defense. And as impressive as Washington's defense was last year, I think both teams are in this similar mood of, hey, we all went into the offseason, and this is both the Chiefs and Washington, where the defense is not the big concern. You know, that should be the part of the team that transfers year over year pretty okay. Like, marketable improvement would be great. Little dip is fine. It's surprising to me from an observer here in Kansas City how Washington has struggled on defense. I think most people in the league thought that Kansas City had to be competent, had to be, you know, slightly above average to continue to stay, you know, superior in the AFC. And they've fallen off a cliff in a lot of ways. They have one true star player right now. That person is Tyrann Mathieu. I would tell Taylor Heinicke not to target anybody he's covering on Sunday's game, because there's openings throughout the secondary, most specifically Daniel Sorensen, who's played, who's in the midst of his worst stretch of his career. And the Chiefs pass rush has not been as dominant as people, and me included, perceived, because Chris Jones has a left sore wrist injury. He did not play in Sunday's game against Buffalo. Frank Clark has been dealing with hamstring injuries. He doesn't seem to have the same burst that he once did. Jaron Reed was the Chiefs' biggest offseason acquisition on defense as a defensive lineman who was supposed to add more girth to the interior. He has not recorded a sack through five games this season. So it's weird to know that a team last year knew they were champions, knew they could turn it on whenever they wanted, and that is not the case this year. They're going to have to fight and really grind out games, and Mahomes, in a weird way, has to be even more excellent than what is usually required from a superstar quarterback, to where I think he's starting to feel the pressure of, I can't make mistakes, and in fact, I need to be above average on just about every play versus the brilliance that he would show you in certain stretches.
I mean, that's how life is on some level, right? I mean, I rarely achieve the point of a mindset where I feel free to do what I want, that my actions are not tethered to the world around me, that I can just do what I want and it'll work out. and when all of a sudden you realize, oh, I don't know, whatever it is, there's outside pressures in various ways, it can be limiting. Maybe that's part of what's happening with him, obviously. And that's also like with the NFL, right? I mean, it's just so hard. It's what makes the Patriots. I mean, look, Kansas City, I would still, for this moment, if you said to me, who's going to be in the AFC Championship game? Probably I'd still have to think hard about picking the Chiefs, if not actually picking them. So, you know, but like, it's what makes what the Patriots did so impressive. And partly is because you had Tom Brady there the whole time, but still everything else around him kept changing, and they largely were in contention, if not actually making the Super Bowl, because, you know, in the salary cap era and, you know,
correct,
20 other things happening at all times. It's so challenging. Look, both teams' defenses are terrible. In fact, as I was looking up a lot of Washington stats, a couple times, the only team that was worse than them in a certain category was Kansas City. So they're both struggling on that end. And obviously for Washington, even if they were, you know, firing on all cylinders, to use a cliche, the Patrick Mahomes would be a problem. And obviously, assuming that everybody else is, you know, all their main weapons are there, they're obviously Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I guess he's not going to be there. He's not a marquee running back in the league, but, you know, still, you take away anybody's starters and that's a problem. Part of me wonders, though, for Washington, the only two games they've won this year is when the offense has scored at least 30 points. And that's just such a tough ask for Taylor Heinicke, no matter what. And if Mahomes is getting going against a defense that's been struggling, I don't realistically know that they have the firepower, especially when you look at what Washington's missing. Before we started recording, you asked me, wait, is Ricky Seals-Jones, who was with your team last year, starting for Washington when he barely played in Kansas City? I'm like, yeah. I mean, Logan Thomas is out, and the only other backups they have are some rookies who are just completely unproven, and he's had to go out there, and he's actually done a couple of decent things since he's been here. But at the same point, that's where we're at. A guy who's just a journeyman guy for depth is having to play real minutes. We don't know if real snaps. We don't know if Curtis Samuel is going to be available this week after he goes out again with the groin injury. Their starting right tackle, Sam Cosmi, got hurt in this last game. We'll see what his deal is. They already were without two other receivers going into the week. And then let's not forget Ryan Fitzpatrick's not playing, which is why Taylor Heinicke is here. So it is, to me, when Washington's gone up against good defenses, those have been Heinicke's two worst games. He won't be going up against a good defense this week, but he will be having to go up to keep pace with an offense that typically scores a lot of points almost against anybody. I guess in Heinicke's favor, he already went up against Tom Brady in the playoffs last year and showed he's not going to shrink from a big spot. On the other hand, they still lost the game. And, you know, this is a tough stretch for them. They need to find a way to win one of these next handful of games. It's going to be tough. And it doesn't seem that it's going to be this one, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know how the offense is going to keep up, I guess is what I'm saying, if Kansas City is doing what they probably will do.
Yeah, the big question for me in terms of this game on defense for the Chiefs is, can they tackle effectively? Because, you know, does Washington have the same collection of skill position players and speed similar to what was showed Sunday night against Buffalo? And the answer is no. But one thing that can help Washington is the Chiefs have had stretches this year where they've missed a lot of tackles in the open field, which obviously equate to first downs that you don't necessarily expect, which extend drives. And then the Chiefs have not been really good in the red zone in terms of defending their own goal line. For Mahomes and the Chiefs, they're probably going to have to be passing the ball more than they expect, just because Clyde Edwards-Helaire did have a left MCL sprain in Sunday night's loss to the Buffalo Bills. He'll be out, I think, a couple weeks. The Chiefs will have to decide later this week if he's going to be staying on the active roster or if he's going to be added onto the short-term IR, which means he would miss the first, you know, the next three games. They don't really have anybody proven on the running back standpoint. There's Darrell Williams, an undrafted guy who's been with the team for a few years, but he's been never asked to start for long stretches of a season. There's Jerick McKinnon, who is a very nice scat back veteran, but based on his injury history, I don't know if you want to be giving him a ton of touches. And so a lot is going to be put on Patrick Mahomes' shoulders. The one thing that I know Ron Rivera and that coaching staff is going to harp on is, A, if you look at the Chiefs' losses this year, you know, the Chargers scored 30 points. The Baltimore Ravens scored 36. The Buffalo Bills just scored 38. You have to score 30 to have a chance to beat this team, even though they're not playing their best football, one could say right now. And then secondly, they need turnovers. I think whichever defense gets turnovers in this game will massively help their chances in terms of winning. The Chiefs have not had a turnover, Ben, since the second quarter of week two. I mean, that is just a drought that you rarely see this early in the year. But the Chiefs defense is also a unit that has given up 29 or more points in all five games. So, hey, Washington fans, 29 to 30 is doable, even with Tyler Heinicke and guys that you necessarily weren't expecting to sort of count on when the season began. But the Chiefs can help their offense if they get some turnovers, and I believe Washington can do the same thing, because whoever has the short field, whoever can sort of build some momentum, I feel will have a large advantage, just because – look, Jalen Hurts had his best game of the season against the Chiefs defense. So Washington fans should hope that Tyler Heinicke has a similar performance, but this time in a winning effort, if he A, doesn't turn the ball over, and B, the Chiefs miss tackles and they don't get turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, Heinicke's, like I said, he's been a gamer. He's largely played fairly well, especially if you consider expectations. And even if you don't, you know, he's done fine. Terry McLaurin's a beast. Antonio Gibson is a legit playmaker. They don't use J.D. McKissick out of the backfield nearly enough for my view, especially with Curtis Samuel out. But, you know, they are pretty limited elsewhere. And, you know, that's a problem. It's interesting. Like, normally, you know, you talk about putting pressure on a quarterback is a good thing. You know, it lowers his success rate.
Yes.
Heinicke's case, it almost feels like it's been the opposite, because when he pressured, he takes off and he can move, and he's really effective running, either to get, you know, to get yards or just to get out of the pocket. But his issues with interceptions have been when he's staying in the pocket too long and thinks he can throw the ball to a spot and he doesn't have a strong arm. And that's when he's gotten into problems, either with the reads or just he is so confident, even in a league of confident humans, that he's making those kinds of mistakes. So I don't know how to tell a team to suggest pressure, but only to a point. But at the same point, that, you know, feels like that's where some of his mistakes have come. So to the point you mentioned before, Washington should not target Tyrann Mathieu. Seems like a reasonable thought.
Yes. Don't go anywhere near that man. He is the only guy that I would be like, I don't know if I'd do that. But everybody else is up for play. And look, one can argue their best cornerback, Javarius Ward, he has missed the last three games with a quad injury. As this week goes on, I'll obviously report on how his participation is in practice, there's a chance he could play, but even his absence has made the secondary a lot worse.
Yeah. So, I mean, that'll be interesting to see there. And actually I was thinking before I should at least talk about Washington's defense, because, you know, you mentioned that from your perspective on the outside that it's been confusing. I can tell you sitting here, it's super confusing. you mentioned the turnovers. They got two turnovers in this game against this last game against the Saints. Those were their first turnovers since week one. They're getting pressure on the quarterback. It's not leading to sacks. That's not necessarily sacks are, you know, not always the best indicator of what's happening, but at the same point, it shows some sort of finishing the play and not just Correct. Getting there. They're also been using a lot of five defensive linemen looks, which is odd because it's odd for any team, but they're using it in a combination of their five of their best defensive players are all linemen. Mm. Matt Ioannidis, the fifth guy, he's really good. He would be easily a starter for a lot of teams, but they just have a lot of other guys. So they've been using that, but it's also to help cover up for the fact that their linebackers are really not good. And they're getting spotty play in the secondary to boot. And so, you know, the idea of like how this defense is going to match up against Travis Kelce, I really don't even comprehend how that's going to go. And so that's scary. But then you have obviously, you know, Chase Young got his first sack last week. The individual linemen have all at times had some good plays. They just collectively haven't been dominant. So I know Joe Thuney has a busted hand, and because he's an offensive lineman, he'll just keep playing. but what about the rest of the Chiefs line? Obviously, there was a lot of changes this year. How are they holding up? Is this a game where Washington could maybe get going in terms of sacks and pass rush, or is the Chiefs line good enough that Mahomes is probably gonna have enough time to kind of do what he wants?
Yeah, it's a great question, Ben, because, you know, the Chiefs, their number one priority this offseason was to revamp the entire offensive line, because everybody saw that Patrick Mahomes can't be Superman even behind a makeshift offensive line, which was the case in Super Bowl 55 last year. So Orlando Brown is at left tackle. Joe Thuney, who fractured his hand and played every snap. I mean, talk about toughness and consistency and just overall how just solid he's been for the team this far as at left guard. And then on the right side, they've got three rookies with center Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, and Lucas Niang, who opted out of last year and is in his rookie season this year. The offensive line has not been an issue. You know, I think for people here in Kansas City, myself included, it was like, okay, much of the early start of the season is how will the offensive line play? How will they protect Mahomes? That really didn't become an issue by week two, or that was not a topic, I should say. The Thuney element will be interesting. If he doesn't play, it'll be the first time in his 6-year career that he will have not played an NFL game. He's played 85 consecutive regular season games. So that would create some change. Maybe that would bring up Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, who opted out last year, but was a part of the Super Bowl winning team in 19. There's Nick Allegretti, who's a young guy. And so for Washington, I think if they're going to use five linemen, that would be interesting, because Mahomes really hasn't faced that type of defensive front before, or at least not often, in my opinion. You know, most teams are not blitzing Mahomes. So if you're going to have five linemen going up against him, it would be a little bit of a wrinkle from what they faced so far. I think what the Bills demonstrated in Sunday night's game is, as long as you're near Mahomes, that is a good thing. He's so elusive. He can extend plays. He's so creative and uses improvisation to his ability that there are going to be times where he's just ultimately frustrating. But what I give the Bills credit for is, yes, he extended the play and you didn't sack him when you thought you could. And sure, he threw a touchdown to Byron Pringle in the first half. But because you were near him so much and because the Chiefs were behind, that pressure was felt even by one of the best quarterbacks in the league, if not the best quarterback. So the Bills got one sack. I would tell Washington fans, if you get any sacks on Patrick Mahomes, it is a successful day, but you need constant pressure and you need to kind of be around him. That way he's not extending the play and finding Travis Kelce in the middle of the field, or you're giving 2 to 3 seconds for him to find Tyreek Hill, which is really been a marker of how successful this team has been on offense, or how, I guess, explosive. In the two wins the Chiefs have had this season, Tyreek Hill has caught a pass of more than 40 yards. In their losses, he has not. So that's something that, you know, Washington will have to keep in their mind, because the pass rush, even if you don't get there, it can at least limit explosive plays, and it can force Mahomes to scramble versus extending a play that leads to a touchdown. So the Bills, I thought, did the best job this season of saying, hey, we're going to rush with four. We're going to at least be near Mahomes. We're going to at least make him, we're at least going to speed his timing to find his receivers. And Washington's got to do something similar, even if they don't get, you know, two or three sacks on Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, when you go with the five defensive linemen, they used it like 30 something snaps last week, which is
very high.
Yeah. Really staggering amount. And the Saints essentially countered with, you know, certain types of play calls. They went empty backfield more than they had. They actually included Alvin Kamara in the passing game, which they hadn't done in some of their earlier games. And they took advantage of that. And it just feels like Kansas City is going to be able to do that. And rushing five takes away a pass defender.
Correct.
And so like you said, teams are blitzing Mahomes less. That doesn't seem like they're, I mean, therefore, like, technically they're blitzing by bringing five. So
correct.
That doesn't seem like the way to go. But like I said, they're so limited at linebacker right now, they would probably have to go with like six defensive backs. And then, you know, I guess if you want to say, well, Kansas City's run game maybe isn't there because of the injury, that maybe that's something to do if they want to run.
You're right on it, Ben. That would be my suggestion for Ron Rivera, is like, if you give up 200 rushing yards, you may actually have a better chance of winning, because it takes the ball out of Tyreek Hill's hand. It takes the ball out of Travis Kelce's hand. And as, you know, we mentioned earlier, Damian Williams Darrell Williams is fine. He is a fine running back. He's not as elusive or as quick titch as Clyde Edwards-Helaire, which is clearly why he's not the starter. But yeah, if you present six defensive backs, you say, hey, please hand the ball off to Darrell Williams. Like, please, like,
right.
Can you just hand the ball off to him 20 times? I would tell Washington fans to like, unless the Chiefs are like near the goal line or it's like fourth and one, you should be cheering every time Darrell Williams has the ball, because you want him to beat you, not the guys that, you know, are superstar, multiple Pro Bowl players on this offense. But, you know, if you're going to stay with five defensive linemen to keep pressure on Mahomes, that's fine. But you need less. I would agree. You need probably less linebackers on the field, and hope that your guys can hold up in coverage.
For sure. Last question for you. Obviously, Kansas City has gotten a lot more attention around the league the last few years with Mahomes and the success that they've had. And I'm sure that's led to some bandwagon fans popping up, or maybe even Kansas City just Chief fans saying, hey, I want to support my team when they're on the road. Washington has had a lot of problems this year getting anybody to show up to games. I don't even know what I forgot to look it up, what the attendance number was this week, but I'm pretty sure it was under 50,000. The first two games were sort of around that as well. So what's your sense? Is there a big backing of Chiefs fans here? Do you imagine that there's going to be a good crowd? Because seats are available. The only question is, will people show up?
Very, very interesting question, because yes, I feel like there were a lot of Chiefs fans in Baltimore a few weeks ago for that Sunday night game. Obviously that's a natural rivalry that highlights, you know, John Harbaugh and Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. And so in Philly, I felt like there were less Chiefs fans, but that's mostly because it's Philadelphia. I mean, those people will at least love to boo the Eagles if they are underwhelming, or if they're not, you know, trying to be aggressive against the Chiefs offense, which was the case. And it was hilarious to know every time the Eagles kicked the field goal that fans were booing. Because it's an early game, I wonder how many Chiefs fans will travel. You know, I think the Chiefs have grown in popularity, of course, as you mentioned, more fans who are on different parts of the country who want to obviously have some tie to Kansas City are showing up more. I would not count on the Chiefs to be a sellout, man, but if there's one opportunity to do so, maybe. But it's not like the Chiefs are the Steelers or the Packers just yet, in my opinion, where
right.
They're going to show up regardless of where you are. in the NFL slate on a particular Sunday. But yeah, there'll be a decent amount of Chiefs fans, and it'll be fascinating to know if this game is something like we see, you know, more and more in either in LA or Las Vegas, where the venue and the city itself lends in, obviously the home team's perhaps performance or lack thereof may lead to more of a neutral site sort of feel. But I wouldn't say Chiefs fans are going to fill up the stadium. That'd be surprising to me.
fair enough. This podcast will go up later this week. At that point, you'll have some other work up on The Athletic. Anything people should be keeping an eye on to get themselves ready for this Chiefs Washington game?
Yes, Washington fans, if there's any solace I could give you, I have to do a story later this week explaining just how historically bad the Chiefs defense are. So if you want optimism, if you want to feel like, hey, we have a chance, even against Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, there are things that I'm still learning every day about this defense statistically. And you know this, Ben, just watching from your seat on the All 22, that it's just like, wow, this is worse. This is really, really bad. So there'll be a story later on this week about the state of the Chiefs defense and if there's any way to improve it. And a lot of Chiefs fans are circling this game, Ben, to say if we can't, you know, if the Chiefs can't have some level of improvement defensively against Washington, then I think a lot of fans will be like, well, we should score 40 every game because that's the situation that they're going to be in. So that'll be on theathletic.com. And the idea that Washington can say, hey, we don't have the worst defense because Nate just told us it's in Kansas City. And they just so happen to be your opponent on Sunday.
Fair enough. I mean, I don't know what the over for this game is. I think it's like 56, I think I saw maybe somewhere.
You might want to take it, y'all.
you might want to take it. Nate Taylor, definitely appreciate it, man. Well, are you coming to D.C.?
Yes, sir. I'll be coming to D.C. It'll be my first time at FedEx Field, so you'll have to probably show me around, Ben.
Hopefully, you'll do other better sightseeing in D.C. and you'll just show up to the stadium for work. It's not that.
Yes.
No disrespect to anybody. It's not that exciting. Thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, man.
All right. And now, as promised, joining me here on the podcast, it's been a long minute since he's been on the podcast. Normally, we talk nonsense like the Wizards, which we're going to get to because I need to know what he thinks. And I need to hear if he's in a good mood about the team or he's still skeptical. But we're also going to talk starting here about everything that's going on with, well, not everything. We're going to talk about what's going on with the John Gruden situation and how it connects to Washington and kind of what is really kind of going on behind the scenes here, as best we can guess. Doing that is our friend Patrick Ruby, Patrick and I both cover sports. I'm covering the silly part. He covers the serious parts. That's why we're having him on, because this is a serious topic, and we'll get to the silly Wizards in a minute. But first, Patrick, it's been a minute. How are you?
I'm good. It's great to be back. I believe the last time I actually was on here, it was the Locked On Wizards podcast. Now we're here at The Athletic. That's amazing.
I take some glee in the fact that when I was giving up the Locked On Wizards, I was like so bummed because I'm like, I built it up and it had done well. And I was, you know, doing the 5 days a week like you had. People were like, dude, are you serious? Nobody else is going to keep up this pace. I'm like, oh, really? It doesn't seem like it's that complicated. And since then, there's been, I think, literally 9 or 10 hosts that have gone through. So I take some pride in that.
I hate you because I ain't you, Ben.
So I appreciate the time. And, you know, you are, like I said, I'm being serious. Like you deal with a lot of serious-minded topics. You do a lot of great work with regards to concussions. Mm-hmm. We've talked in the past about, whether college athletes should be getting paid, things like that. And I didn't necessarily know whether you were weighing in or you had been doing things with regards to either the NFL's investigation into Washington or this particular topic with Gruden. Mm-hmm. But I did see you were tweeting. We're talking on Tuesday. I think I saw you tweeting yesterday on Monday when everything kind of broke down about this. So I reached out and said, let's do that here. So mm-hmm. I really don't even know. I mean, I know your stance because I know you and I saw what you're tweeting. You're a morally upstanding person. So I get where your stance is, but I'm curious about some of the, what do we make of what is actually happening here?
Right.
For anybody who's not aware, by the time you hear this, I would imagine you would be, but just quickly, over the last few days, various emails have come out that showed John Gruden back in 2011 to have said various misogynistic, homophobic, you have emails with racial tropes, what various things like that. And the totality of it led to him resigning, I guess, before, rather than just the Raiders or the NFL stepping in and doing something.
Right.
So that's the basis of that. The reason why it's interesting on a lot of fronts, to localize it, a lot of these emails were apparently to Bruce Allen when Bruce Allen was the team president of the Washington, well, then it was the under a different name, as we know, but the Washington team president. And all of this stems from the NFL's investigation into Washington's culture connecting to the various charges of harassment and other, you know, negative things going on with this organization that led to the Wilkinson report that was turned in but not released, so on and so on. And it is really interesting to watch this as sort of a microcosm of society. Is it just a matter of, it's a difference between who cashes checks and who writes the checks as to what's happening here, why John Gruden goes down and Dan Snyder doesn't? Where is this all coming from? And get all that, but just for you, I guess, to that aspect of it, just that localizing aspect, what do you make of the fact that we're here, that John Gruden got effectively taken down because of an investigation into Washington?
I mean, there's a lot here, like you said, there's a lot to sort of unpack. I mean, first of all, the content of the emails themselves, you know, I'm sure there's people out there listening that would defend that. I would not. Like, I think you described it pretty accurately. It's homophobic, racist, sexist. I mean, we shouldn't leave out. He also was bashing the NFL's safety efforts to try to protect players from brain injuries, which is pretty bad. And I believe in the report, there was, it said that in these emails, there was also like photos of, I think, Washington football team cheerleaders topless. It seemed like these were non-consensual photos of that. These were not like calendar photos. These are like photos you should not be having or sharing. Like, that's also a violation of people. So there's really a lot, like, John Gruden, you know, he really hit for the cycle in these emails in terms of like being a terrible human being. It's not really surprising that he is resigning. I'm sure that he would have been fired otherwise. But I do agree with you, especially in the local angle here in Washington, like the context of these emails, beyond the content of the emails, is incredibly interesting and I think troubling in some ways. So it's like, we know that these came from the Wilkinson investigation, that's an outside lawyer, outside law firm brought in by the NFL to investigate the absolute mess around the front office and leadership of Washington football team, right? The Washington Post has done extensive reporting on this. We don't need to rehash it all here, but essentially you had like a pretty bad and toxic work culture with all sorts of harassment, sexual harassment and other sort of bad things happening. And like you said, there's a report done by this law firm. None of us have ever seen it, right? We know that Dan Snyder the team was fined, right? Was it Dan Snyder or the team that was fined? $10 million?
It's one of those things where like, it's Dan Snyder, but like, because it's technically the team made sure to say that it wasn't him, that it was the organization that was fined, but obviously he owns it. So I don't.
Right. And we know that like, there's been some, like, I don't want to say a total house clean, that maybe that's not the right term, but like some people are gone from the front office now that were there during these times and new people are there.
Correct.
Snyder, he had some sort of hiatus, right? From technically running the team, is that right?
He technically is still on this. He stepped down. They didn't suspend him. I'm air quoting, stepped down. But his wife, who was named CEO or co-CEO, whatever, she is now running. So it's one of those things like, wait, you're not, but the woman, you guys are in the same house and all that. And you're not discussing the work. Okay, sure. So
right. I mean, so I think what you can say at the conclusion of all this is like, there was some, but I would say very limited accountability for whatever happened with Washington. And what we know happened, what we know about what happened, mostly came from the Washington Post, like, and other reporters. We have not seen much of anything from this Wilkinson report, except for these leaked emails that largely implicate John Gruden, right? Who never actually worked for this team. He was working for ESPN at the time, most of these emails, right? And they were from 2011, but also going forward in time. I believe the last ones were from 2016, 2017. I have to double check the reporting, but that's my memory of that from reading it yesterday. So it does make me wonder, you know, I think in the report it said there's something like 600,000 emails that were reviewed, something like that. It was a really large amount. And we don't know what's there. So we have no idea, like, who else was saying terrible stuff in these emails, right, to each other. Is it just John Gruden and apparently Bruce Allen and one or two other guys that were like CEOs that were just sort of, we don't even know if those are the only people that were copied into or in this email chain, right? That was a little bit unclear also from the reporting. So I think there's a lot of unanswered questions as to, like, what did they actually find out about the front office culture and the people in it here in Washington? And is it always going to remain buried? Because right now that's just been buried. The NFL basically slapped them on the wrist and kind of like, this is over. We've done our investigation. Everybody's moving forward. Nothing to see here. And this coming out now, that makes it seem like, no, there's probably some more things to see. There always were more things to see, but it's reminding everybody of that fact.
Yeah, for sure. So let's backtrack here for a quick second. So like we said, they do this months long investigation into Washington, the Wilkinson report. They turn it into the NFL. The NFL, you know, they find Dan Snyder. They strongly condemn some things, but ultimately they did determine not to, or they say they're not going to show the actual report, and, you know, they're going to kind of keep it all under house. I wish I did not look up the exact wording, but it's some version of, like, you know, it's a lot of things are, you know, we don't want to put this out into the world. There's some troubling stuff or whatever. But then obviously now these John Gruden emails get out, and that does make it's odd. So let's go back here. So the other day when John Gruden, so last week, the first John email comes out where John Gruden makes comments about NFL PA head Damora Smith racist tropes in that email. It was just that one email, I believe, at that moment. Right. And it was happening at the exact time that Damora Smith was up for re-election as the person who's in charge, the president, not the president, but he's running the NFL Players Association, right? He's the outside head of that.
Right, right. I think what was going on with the FPL was the idea if he didn't sort of get a certain number of votes from, I don't know if it was the executive committee or maybe the player rep committee, right? It wasn't from the entire body of NFL players, but it was sort of like one of those higher up committees. Then they would have to call for an election with other candidates and things like that. But if he got a certain number of votes, he would just stay on for the rest of his, I guess, his remaining term. I think it's basically that was what was going on. So it was kind of like a bit of a vote of confidence, no confidence in D. Smith. And so, yeah, there's peculiar timing that came out. And I think there was speculation at the time, somebody leaked this to help D. Smith
right
with that, which is, you know, very like tinfoil hat conspiracy brain thinking, but it wouldn't be impossible, right? Well, I think it's certainly possible.
And to that end, so I do an annual NFL agent survey mm-hmm. where agents give me answer anonymously to a bunch of questions. And the one I did, it was just a couple of months ago. One of the questions was, what do you think of the job that Damora Smith is doing? And, you know, agents can be all over the place. They're answering them independently of one another. There was a pretty strong consensus that they are not a big fan of him. And I'm sort of saying that lightly. Like, there were a lot of, you can read the article, there were a lot of strong comments against what Damora Smith is doing. So not that the agents have sway in the matter, but obviously their clients are players. So therefore, maybe they have some. And the fact that it even got to the point where there had to be a potentially this bigger vote, right, as you're mentioning, where in the previous years, he just kind of breezed through, I think shows that there was some discontent with this. There was discontent with the last labor cycle. I mean, obviously, it depends on who you are. Do you have star players? Do you have rank and file players as to how you view it? And that's always going to be the case, I guess. But there were definitely a lot of people who were not in favor of him. So I agree. I think that was my own initial thought, was, wow, this is interesting timing that the NFL maybe kind of wants Damora Smith to stay because they think they've done pretty well, and the timing is interesting. So
I would say on that front, A, you know, like, if you not just talk to agents, but in general, if you look at sort of the 2011 CBA and then the most recent CBA, like, most people who are impartial observers would agree that the owners won both times. Now, and I've done some, in full disclosure, I've done some work, some investigative stuff, some reporting around the NFLPA. This is 4 or 5 years ago now. And I walked away from that being not especially impressed with the leadership of the NFLPA. That includes Damora Smith, but it's not exclusive to him. On the other hand, I will just say very, very quickly, that is an extremely difficult job. Like, running any sports union is difficult. Going against the owners is very difficult. But it's particularly difficult in football for a bunch of reasons, especially because the careers are so short. It's such a violent sport. So much of the money is not guaranteed. It's very, very hard to ultimately threaten a strike. And if you can't do that, you only have so much power. That's why the baseball union always does so much better than the football union, right? So I just want to say, in terms of like, it is plausible out of all that, that the owners would want D. Smith to stay around. But if that was the only leak, I would believe that theory sort of more. The fact that this second leak of emails came out after that, and they're much worse and much more devastating to Gruden, but also pull in Bruce Allen and also call the league culture into question, and also remind everybody of this Wilkinson report that basically was like a slap on the wrist, a fine, and we're not going to really tell you, the public, anything that's going on. I don't see any upside for the NFL itself to be leaking any of that just to get rid of John Gruden. So that's why I'm really confused as to what is going on here.
So, right. So, right. I agree with you. So like, I think I'm correct, but this is, so much has now happened. Didn't over the, at some point, it was, I think Adam Schefter had a story on Sunday that he talked to John Gruden on Friday, and John Gruden said something to the effect of, he also said disparaging things about Roger Goodell in the same batch of emails. But I sort of got the sense of like noticing that he's pointing out that that didn't get leaked, because to the point of the D'Amore Smith thing, that maybe isn't serving the NFL's agenda. But I think Gruden was trying to say at that point, I'm an equal opportunist asshole, basically, right? Or something.
I think he was. I mean, look, Roger Goodell is also not an especially popular figure in American culture or among NFL players. So I am sure that like, if it was just emails where he was saying bad things about Roger Goodell, John Gruden would probably still be working right now. And like, even if he had said bad things that were like homophobic or misogynist about Roger Goodell, probably could have gotten away with that, I think. Not sure, but I think so. But it's with all this other stuff, it's like no chance. And like I said, it isn't just about John Gruden. And that's what's so interesting. And that's why I don't think at least the second round of stuff was leaked by the league intentionally, because it only creates a PR nightmare for them.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's why. So once everything else happens, you're like, whoa, that's a lot. That's a lot to get through. And like, John Gruden isn't just a regular coach. He is one of the bigger names, you know, in this sport. I saw somebody make the point that like, John Gruden has kind of, in many ways, he's been a guy who's like defined, maybe not individually, but he's kind of defined the NFL for the last,
yeah,
you know, 30 years as a coach, Monday Night Broadcaster, commercial pitch man, the Chucky face. Like,
yep.
You think football, like John Gruden is the guy on some level.
I think culturally he's not close to what John Madden once was for the NFL, but he's the closest thing we have now in our much more fragmented culture. Nobody could be John Madden now, right, for football. But he's kind of like the closest thing you could have in 2020, 2021 to John Madden for football. So I agree with you. There isn't a lot of upside for the sport of football to have this all come out about John Gruden. So it makes me wonder, you know, what else is going on here. And one of the things I wonder, and I'm just going to put on my total like conspiracy theory speculative hat right now, is either is there a struggle internally at the NFL, or is there a struggle internally with the law firm the NFL hired to investigate the Washington football team, where they were not happy with the results of the NFL's investigation. They were not happy with what seemed like a slap on wrist. They were not happy with the lack of transparency. And this stuff is being sort of leaked slowly as a warning of like, we have this stuff. We can make it real bad for a lot of you if you don't do something more. This is just speculation, right? But I'm just kind of curious, because I'm trying to figure out what's the motive otherwise.
Yeah, no, and that's a great thought. I hadn't thought about that, about the, you know, perhaps somebody with the law firm. So it does get to the interesting idea, right? Like, on the one hand, if we're going with the idea that somehow this is the NFL, then I understand why they didn't. There's nothing out about Dan Snyder, right?
Stuff already in the public. I mean,
there's 20 years. There's 20 years of stuff.
I know, by the way, I think we should also keep in mind, a lot of the people who came forward to either speak in the Post and or speak with the Wilkinson investigators, right? Mostly women, right? They have since come forward and been like, release the report. Like, we need more transparency. Put this out there. Like, we've risked a lot talking about this. Like, they're not happy. At least a lot of them are not happy with how the NFL decided to then take action on what it found out. Right. So there's that too. Like it's not, but I think my sense is that this was something that otherwise, like, fans, the public had kind of moved on from, for better or worse. Had just decided, get back to football. Let's move forward. Excited about watching football again. And now you have people like us talking about this. And I'm sure that there are fans wondering beyond just the John Gruden part of it. Like, it's reminding them about what happened here in Washington. Right? It's not helping the NFL's agenda or Washington's agenda of moving forward from that. Right? So again, it really makes it seem like unlikely that someone with the NFL would want this out there.
Right. So if it is, so if there is something else out there, if there's somebody else, then it does beg the question, okay, you know, we're right now up on Capitol Hill, there's been a Facebook whistleblower talking for the last, you know, few days or last week, or at least track of time here. And, you know, that's obviously, that's interesting for that story. So is that something that could potentially come out of here? I mean, obviously some people have seen these things, whether it's people at the law firm or people with the league. And I don't know if you saw this or not today, but it was pointed out to me that back in 2014, Dan Snyder did an interview, and it was written about by our friend Dan Steinberg when Dan Steinberg wrote things. Dan did his classic, you know, transcribing more or less an interview and reacting off of that. But in this 2014 interview, Dan Snyder apparently revealed that he doesn't do email. Which is, of course, bizarre on 100 levels, and yet seems almost perfect for how we think of him. So I don't necessarily know that there would be emails really, you know, connecting him to any of this or anything else. But yes, again, there's other things out there. So it does make me wonder, like, will this reach a point now that it's been given new life? Not that I'm not saying it went away. As somebody who covers a team, I can tell you it hasn't. But
right.
At the same time, now it's a different scope. Now I've seen just over the last 24 hours, all kinds of columns and all kinds of people say, hey, we need these out there. Apparently, I think USA Today has the NFLPA is going to request that the Wilkinson Report findings be made public.
Right.
And so on. So it is interesting to see, like, I get where Goodell is probably going to continue to stonewall this. He's going to protect their own, to the point I was making earlier. There is a difference between the owners and the worker bees. It's one of the reasons why, without trying to get political here, that it's so frustrating when we deal with some of the other big topics in the presidential or other elections, in which it seems like the people below, you know, the people out of power should be so much more connected to each other, because everything that the people up top are doing is affecting everybody to a certain degree the same, because it's not about individuals. It's about they maintaining control. They don't do it. And so similar here, they're going to protect one of their own. By the way, there's also, you got to ask the question, why would they do that? Right. I mean, Dan Snyder, I don't know whether you think he's a litigious guy. He's got dirt on other people. There's other reason they're doing this. They'll find somebody else to buy the team. That's not the issue.
I mean, look at how long. Let's go up to another sports owner with some extremely, like, troubled and bad takes and thoughts and actions. Donald Sterling with the LA Clippers. Look at how long and what it actually took to get rid of him, to get him out of the NBA. And that tells you a lot about, like, how sports owners look at each other and how they sort of protect each other, even if they don't like or agree with each other. There is sort of an element of, like, well, we're all in this together, slash, like, if I don't look out for you, I could be next on the chopping block, right? I just think there's a mentality of that there, whether it's right or wrong. I think that's kind of how a lot of them look at it.
I think Mark Cuban, when the Donald Sterling vote went down, and I hope I'm not getting this wrong, I think Mark Cuban made some comment like, look, I'm this guy's not great. But just to be clear, if we do this, any one of us might be next. So keep that in mind, that obviously that's, you know, he almost was that guy.
I mean, look, the ultimate thing to a lot of these owners is like, I made it. I'm one of the 30 people in the world that gets to own this thing, to have this toy. And I'll be damned if anything takes that away from me. Right. Like, that's kind of like their ultimate value above everything else when it comes to this. Again, for good or for bad or worse. And in my opinion, very much worse. But so I do wonder. And also, I think one last thing we should probably be clear about with the Wilkinson Report is, like, that's a law firm being hired by the NFL to investigate an NFL team.
Well, technically, so they were hired by Dan Snyder first, okay, which was bizarre.
I was gonna say, that's even crazier.
And then the NFL took over, yeah.
But even if the NFL takes over, what is the NFL? The NFL is the 30 owners, right? So ultimately, like, it is not a fully independent investigation by any sense of the term, right? It just isn't, right? And now some of those types of, when companies investigate themselves, right, sometimes they can do a very credible job and sometimes not. And usually it's kind of in between. So we should also, like, hey, if this ever actually does come out, like, are we going to even get the full investigation, right? Are we get some redacted or edited or whatever version? We don't really know, right? We've seen, you mentioned like bigger politics and things like that. We saw how that can work during the last presidential administration in terms of like full reports versus summaries and who gets to edit them and things like that, right? Shout out to Bill Barr. But we also don't know, like, even if we were to get the full version of this report, like, how deep did they dig? How much did they, what did they really want to find out, right? And because, again, you shouldn't have to question that stuff, but because of who's paying for it, you do have to question that. So, and we're probably never going to know the full extent of what the culture was and what was going on with the Washington football team, but we certainly can get closer. And so I do kind of personally support these calls for, like, get more of this information out there, be more transparent. You know, the reporting that was done that led to this investigation was really good, but of course there's going to be more there. And I do think if you're a fan, right, even if you're just a fan of football, you should want to know this stuff. Like, I do think that part of being a fan is not just caring about wins and losses, but also sort of caring about, like, the people and the organization, the thing that you're spending all this time, money, effort, and affection on. Like, maybe that makes me naive or old fashioned or weird or stupid, but I think most fans would look at it the same way.
Well, I don't think you're naive or old fashioned for thinking that. You may be naive in thinking a lot of other fans give a crap, because I do think a lot of fans are able to compartmentalize that this product that they love, that they will go on Twitter or elsewhere and say it's the greatest thing of all time, while simultaneously, but and I guess just choosing to ignore or whatever, compartmentalize, like I said, that there's people involved who are unsavory characters. If you said to the local hardware store, you took the exact same principles, you'd probably think, well, I'll just go to Home Depot instead, or do what, you know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't go to that place. But in this case, the NFL has, it's the one product. There is no other product of this kind like it. And people choose to, if not look the other way, they ignore it. Again, I cover the team. I'm not being a hypocrite. This is the job I have. But I'm just saying, like, in terms of, there are a lot of people who I do think, rah, 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 football's the best. And then they're just going to choose to ignore the rest of it.
Look, I understand. I can even understand. Look, I like eating steaks, right? I like eating chicken. I like meat, right? I'm not a vegetarian. Slaughterhouses are pretty terrible. The working conditions are really terrible. And if you spent any time reading about that or checking out any investigative journals about that, it's not great. Right. And that's an understatement. And it's so not great to the point of, like, making you question your own, like, do I want to keep doing this? Do I want to support this by, like, controlling this behavior? And ultimately, I make the choice to do that, right? Same thing with our phones, right? All sorts of, like, terrible labor practices go into making these, like, smartphones that we all have and all sorts of stuff, right? So I don't think, like I said, I don't think it's a case of, like, you can't still be a fan if you know about this stuff. But I think a lot of fans would still want to know. And also they would want to pressure for change, right? That's the other thing, is, like, if you have more transparency with this Wilkerson report or any other kind of reporting, then, like, it helps me as a fan evaluate, okay, the Washington football team is making some moves and saying that they're turning a new page, right? That they're changing their culture, that they're going to be better, that they're going to learn from these, like, what you could charitably call mistakes and uncharitably call, you know, just, like, disastrously intentional decisions, right? But how do I really evaluate that if I don't know the whole story of, like, what the problems were in the first place, right? It's hard for me to evaluate your solutions if you're hiding what the problem was for me. And I think that that's one of the important things. I mean, just again, from a pure fandom standpoint of, like, why you should want to know about this.
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. And I'm with you on some of my personal hypocrisies on things. So totally with you. But yeah, it's important to, I think, at a minimum, think about it, right? Do that. And this is this whole situation, I guess, hopefully has forced a lot of people to think about their blind love in the NFL and also what is happening here. Oh, you know, that was I appreciate you letting me put the tinfoil hat on and ponder a few of these things. here. All right, no easy transition from a serious topic to a silly one, but we're going to do it here in the last couple of minutes I have with you. As I said, the Wizards is how we is how we bonded, but we began connecting back when they were a playoff team with John Wall and Bradley Beal, and it's amazing. I mean, you know, things change, but it's amazing how much has changed probably since last time, at least we did a podcast together. I don't know if we did it post Ernie Grunfeld was gone, but you know, new GM, Scott Brooks is gone. John Wall's gone. Really, other than Bradley Beal, the whole roster is completely turned over, and they've obviously been fairly miserable over the last few years. Now, they did make the playoffs last year. The Russell Westbrook era was a one and done, but it was a lot of fun, I guess you could say, now that it's over. And they obviously were really good down the stretch to make the playoffs. And then, you know, the playoffs kind of predictably there. But okay, it's a new day. It's a new era. Maybe there's room for optimism. Maybe you're like, hey, they got Bradley Beal and a bunch of interesting young dudes. Scott Brooks is gone. I don't even care who's the coach. Or maybe you're like, it's the same. I've seen this song and dance. They should have traded Beal. They're going nowhere. What's the point of living? I don't know where you're going to come from. So tell me, where are you at with the Washington Wizards?
So first of all, you're right. Like, since the last time we really talked about this, it has been, and to use Ben Standig, one of your catchphrases, it's been a minute. So certainly been a minute since we discussed this. As one of, you know, as I always say, as one of the 12 Washington Wizards fans in the city, I have mixed feelings about what's going on. And what I mean is this: on one hand, I look at the current roster and I have no idea if this is a borderline playoff team or not. I don't think they're much more than that. I'm not sure they're any better really overall than maybe they were last year. Not when they were having, you know, their incredible stretch of like Russell Westbrook for a month, just like takes over and puts a team on his back and they beat up on a bunch of bad teams, right? That was really fun. And they were pretty good during that time. Like, all by all the numbers, they were really good. And I don't think they were quite as bad last year as they were at the start of the season when they had an injured Westbrook, all the COVID stuff, like just, they were truly, truly atrocious. To me, this looks like a team that is, you know, probably as usual, fighting for the eighth seed, right? Or fighting for the ninth seed, I guess, now that we've got the play-in game. And, you know, that's okay. It's not where I really want to be as a fan, but like, I guess that's, I don't think they're just that overwhelmingly talented. Right. But what I really think is different beyond, like you said, that, you know, obviously Scott Brooks is gone. Ernie Grunfeld's gone. You know, a lot of decision makers are different now. For the first time that I can remember, like really since, I guess, the disastrous summer of 2016 free agent non-bonanza, this team actually has potential financial roster flexibility. Like, it's not, the team you see on the court right now is not locked in. And the only moves available are like to go find Drew Gooden in the sport and health. You know what I mean? Like, we're not, or like, where's Will Bynum? Bring him over for China to be in a playoff game. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to, the Wizards don't have to do that, right? They actually have, I think, a lot of players on reasonable contracts, making reasonable value, that are movable, that are tradable. Like, they actually have options to sort of shape or reshape or try to build a roster that ultimately makes sense and can win some games, right? Whether they have that right now or not, I'm not really sure. I don't think they're like going to be the worst team in the East, but I don't really see how they're much better. Like, if everything went well, then maybe that's like a 7-seed team. Maybe, you know, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't really see enough talent there. Like, everything you could say about Russell Westbrook, like the Russell Westbrook experience, boy, the good, the bad, the amazing, the spectacularly non-amazing, it was all there last year. I mean, he is a singular guy to watch. I really enjoyed the fact that he was just, there's nothing, no one else really quite like him. And to the extent to which he really, really helps you win, I'm not sure. I think he really raises the floor on a bad team, but I'm not sure how much of the ceiling he raises on a good team. Right. And then I'm saying that like all people that follow the NBA much more closely, sort of that's their take on him. But it was fun and it was interesting. And without him, you know, they have a lot of just parts now, guys that can play roles and sometimes excel in them. But, are they, you know, the thing about role players is like, do they fit together right? And is the sum greater than the whole? Is the sum greater than the parts? And I don't know. We haven't seen that yet. And we got a new coach, right? So we don't really know what he's going to be about. And they have a couple of young guys still that it's like very hard to know what they are, right? Everybody likes Daniel Gafford. He looks pretty good. Like, can he play effectively for more than 20 minutes? Don't know yet. Rui, Denny, no idea what those guys are going to be, if anything.
Yeah. Well, so just to cut you off there, like, so how do I say this without sounding like a self-serving idiot? So like the previous version of this, of my podcast with this, like when I was at that point of my Wizards interest level, like I had a lot of thoughts. I'd been a fan of this team growing up, and then I had covered them for a while, and like I really had some thoughts, and there was no really like Wizards. There was a lot of like Wizards state TV kind of talk, and there was some people who would sort of delve into things, but there wasn't a lot of people talking, like trying to talk candidly about it. And I think I was doing that, and I think that's one of the reasons like some people like you were like, oh, what's going on here? And because I had a lot of thoughts that I thought were pretty, my instincts on that team have been pretty good. And what's unique about the situation we're in, like even the last couple of years when I was started to cover the football team, I didn't have to be out of the Wizards all the time to still know what was happening, because I knew what was going on with Scott Brooks. I had a feel for most of the players,
right?
Like all that stuff. But it is all very different. And for the first time in, I don't even know how many years, I really don't know what to make of this team. I think realistically, if everything goes well, you know, their ceiling is probably not better than a six seed, which, you know, is not like, we can look, if the goal cannot be they got to win a title or else, because obviously that's unrealistic. No. And typically, you know, over the last 40 years, there's a very small handful of teams that have ever won.
There's a small handful of players in any given season that you have to have on your team to have a chance to win the title. Every year, there's probably like, I don't know, 3 to 7 guys. If you don't have one of those guys in your team, you have no chance to win the title. If you have one of those guys, it's not a guarantee, but it just gets you in the door, right? And I think that's just how the NBA is. And they've never had one of those guys, right? At least not since they won a title back in the 70s.
Yeah, so. For sure. So what I think is interesting is, and you made this point, like, look, Russell Westbrook was a lot of things. He was exciting and entertaining, but he was not a guy that you're going to win with. Ultimately, he's only getting you somewhere. I think personally, the situation, him and LeBron, people will no matter, it will say how great it is when they're winning 55 games during the regular season, and it will absolutely stink in the playoffs when Russell Westbrook's going to want to dominate the ball and he can't play off the ball and he can't shoot and LeBron dominating the ball. But that's another story. My point is that Westbrook, that Tommy Shepard turned the John Wall terrible contract into 1 year of Westbrook, and then do what you just said. He got a bunch of stuff. None of the individual pieces are nearly as good as Westbrook. But instead of having this one behemoth of a contract that is very difficult to move, I know they just moved them, but I mean, like, in theory, it's not easy. You need an incredibly motivated.
What were the other Russell Westbrook moves?
You needed an incredibly motivated buyer in LeBron James, basically, to want this to happen. Otherwise, he's probably still on this team. And they now have a lot of guys you can move if you want. They have some interesting young players. I have no idea whether Wes Unseld and his staff will be able to get the most out of them, because how would anybody know that? If anybody tells you they know, don't listen to them. Just stop. Nobody knows. We'll see. And you go from there. And so if they can turn, if some of these guys, if Kyle Kuzma can look like the guy who was a rookie, look like he could be a star in this league, if Rui Hachimura or Denny Avdija or Corey Kispert, even if just one of them turns into a high rotation player, that's success. I like Spencer Dinwiddie pre-injury. It sounds promising from what I hear over there, but like, you know, we'll have to see. You mentioned Daniel Gafford. He was a lot of fun late last season. What's the next step for him? Can he be a guy that can stay on the court 30 to 35 minutes, maybe get one offensive move beyond just doing putbacks? But okay, if you can do these things and with Bradley Beal, and then you're the team that has these interesting contracts, so when the next James Harden type guy says, I want out of here, wherever that here is, and you can say, well, we've got this, we got this, we got, well, maybe you can get that other guy. Whatever it is, it's an interesting group. And to that end, I'm excited to see where it goes. On the other hand, I still feel that this is a team that basically the owner, as my point has always been, the owner is not trying to really compete for a title. He's trying to get into the playoffs. There's revenue there. If you get into the playoffs, it means you probably had a decent enough year that fans will show up in the regular season. As he has said, he will never tank, which is why he basically couldn't trade Bradley Beal even if they wanted to after moving Westbrook, which I think is something they should have considered, even if historically I've been saying keep Beal, because you know it's not easy to get that kind of guy back. So I guess my bottom line is I don't know what to make of this team. In and of itself, that makes it interesting.
And, you know, I guess we'll just see what some of these young guys can do with this new coach.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, to me, the thing that's so different is for the first time in so many years, you know, and largely because they were able, and this is where I give, the front office, whether it was luck or skill or both, they were able to, I hate to use this term, but they were able to get off of John Wall's contract and turn it into movable contracts, right? And it stinks that as fans, we have to think this way, right? I blame all the salary caps and all those other things that, like, that just saves owners money. You know, in my perfect world, none of that would exist. But anyway, I think it gives this team, it gives it a chance to, we don't have, you know, you said, we'll see. For the first time in a long time, it's kind of like a we'll see situation with the Wizards. But also not like, we'll see how this team does because this is your team end of season, right? On basically on opening night. It's like, we'll see. It can go a lot of ways, right? They also have the flexibility now, like if it turns out this isn't very good and Beal finally does want out of this situation and tells them that, and it seems like they have a good relationship. So I think he would give them some warning and some chance to deal him for something instead of them getting nothing. You know, they can actually do that and they could probably solve some of these other parts and go into like a full start with the draft kind of rebuild, right? Or like you said, if it's something where like we think we can add some more stuff around Beal, they have some flexibility to try and do that. Whether that'd be successful or not, I'm not sure. No one knows until you do it. But it's just so different than it's been the last couple of years where it's like you had, at one point you had, you know, Beal, Porter, and Wall. And it was like, okay, whatever like really minimum contract guys you can add, or like, oh, we have this one summer we can spend money, but we blew it on a bunch of guys that can't play. And now we're even in worse shape with that, right? They're finally not in that position anymore. And so to me, as a fan, it's more interesting, even though the product on the court might not look incredibly different, just the idea that product can actually change in a non-marginal way definitely makes it more intriguing.
And the one bad contract you could say they have is Davis Bertans, but he at least has a skill set
right
that contenders covet. Like, you know, for the Wizards, it's challenging. If he's your third best player, we saw how much of a liability is on defense. But if you were to actually, if a contender is like, hey, we just need you to stand in the corner for LeBron or Steph Curry or Kevin Durant or whatever, that's a whole other story. So I think that contract is also movable because just for that reason.
If you need to get rid of Bertans, there's at some point in the next season or two, there's definitely going to be a contender. You're not going to get anything. You might get like a pair of second round picks that don't convert and like an expiring contract or something like that, right? But he does have a very useful NBA skill. In fact, a skill I would argue in some ways is probably more helpful to a contending team than one treading water. I think you can move him, right? It's not like you're going to have to give up a first round pick. It's not Andrew Nicholson's situation, right? You're not going to have to dump a first round pick just to get rid of him. Like, so in that sense, and that's, like I said, that's just a big difference. There's no Mahimis. There's no Andrew Nicholson's.
Yeah. And like, for me, like that beyond the roster, the moves that have been made, my take is always this. This is going to sound, I know, weird, but hang with me. I don't always judge everything based on the end result, because ultimately all the moves we talk about are involving assessing what human beings will do in various contexts, whether that's a 20-year-old, how they're going to mature and grow up, whether it's a 30-year-old and how they accept a new role, who knows? People, we all, right? You don't always know what people are going through. So no matter what moves are made, life is weird and you don't always know how things are going to go. But what I look at is, what's the theory behind the move in the first place? As I've said 100 times, it never made second from the moment they offered the contract to have given Mahimi that deal when you had March and Gortat. You couldn't play them together. Forget the fact you were overpaying Mahimi by $16 million a year. You were probably overpaying by like $10 million each, right? Forget all that. It just didn't make any sense. But almost everything, not everything, but almost everything that Tommy Shepard has done since he's taken over makes logical sense to me. Now, I didn't like the Davis Bertans extension. I said it in the moment, but okay, I understood it. And again, he can do one thing that is particularly valuable in this day and age. But for the most part, he's done a very good job of taking the little thing and making it into a bigger thing down the line. The Troy Brown situation, mm-hmm. We easily could have been screaming, hey, here's a first round pick, the 15th pick in the draft. You're getting rid of him already? Yeah, he did. And he got Daniel Gafford, who I liked
at that moment, but he was even better than expected.
I mean, what Sheppard has been able to do that I think deserves a lot of credit for is with the start of this season, he has finally dug the franchise out of the enormous future asset squandering, stuck in place crater that Grunfeld left it in, right? And again, I don't know if, you know, with Grunfeld is always that question of like, well, is this what Leonsis wanted from him, right? We'll never really know, like, to what extent Ted calls the shots and doesn't call the shots. I was never a fan of Grunfeld's moves, but that was always something that people brought up, right? Is like, it's not just Grunfeld. But Sheppard has done an incredible job of just getting this franchise back to sort of square zero, back to like neutral, right? Back to where like you aren't like, you know, the mortgage is paid off essentially, right? Now what are you going to do with the house, right? The house is not maybe in great shape, but the mortgage is finally paid off and you can actually do something with the house. And that's, so I think in terms of like, what remains to be seen is like what kind of like building forward moves is Sheppard good at? You know, like he's shown that he can do some of these marginal moves. That's great because they never did any of that under Grunfeld. And he's shown that he can over time unwind mistakes that Grunfeld made. And that's great. But in terms of going forward, you know, can he make that move where like he is actually getting back better than what he sent out, right? You could make a case with Gafford that maybe he did that, right? And then the other big thing, the huge thing, and this is where it's never been great for this franchise, is can they actually hit on draft picks and then develop them?
Right.
Really hard if you can't do that. It's just really hard, especially if you're not a destination city or you don't have one of those seven or eight guys we talked about. It's really hard to have sustainable success if you can't do that. And that's a huge open question. We actually have no idea yet whether you can do that or not.
I do think that is the big question because, I mean, Rui Hachimura, you know, his career's had some sort of fits and starts because of some injuries and other things. And then you have, you know, Denny Avdija, his year was interrupted last year. I don't think he was not a good fit with Westbrook because he needs the ball more. And Westbrook, obviously, nobody else is getting the ball in theory when he was there. And obviously, we'll see about Kispert. It sounds like they're liking what they see so far, but we'll see. But you're right. That's ultimately, you got to hit on draft picks. It's not realistically you're going to hit on everyone. You got to turn water into wine, though, at some point and make some of these guys, you know, you got to overachieve on that front as well, or at least get some, you know, singles and doubles and not avoid the strikeouts, which obviously they were not always able to do previously.
Yeah, and to me, the jury is very much out on all the guys you just mentioned. Like, I have no idea. I have no particular confidence that any of them are going to develop into like good players or even, you know, just league average at the position players. They're not so far. So we'll find out. You know, I mean, they all have certain tools that make you squint your eyes and think, okay, maybe this can happen. I mean, look, that's also true with a lot of players that are drafted and young players, right? I'm not trying to single them out because in general, almost no NBA players come into the NBA and are good right away. Like only a handful of like star people ever do that. So we'll have to wait and see. But I mean, I am somewhat concerned in terms of, you know, Kispert, okay, he can actually shoot and that's good. But they still, before that with Rui and with Denny to some extent, it seems like still drafting guys who can't dribble and can't shoot. So I'm not sure what you are and what you actually do on the floor. But, you know, hopefully they can develop those things. You know, I remember when Beal came in, he could shoot. He did not have anything like the handle he has now. He went from having a fairly mediocre handle to having an excellent handle. So it is possible to improve. But in general, when you think about it, like players only tend to improve so much in the NBA. There's a handful of guys that improve wildly past what you would expect. And there's some people that never improve at all. But I mean, it's not a great sign if in the first year or two, you don't see flashes of the player that someone can become. And I'm not sure with the Wizards young guys, obviously Kispert, we haven't seen anything yet, but with Denny and Rui, if we've seen tremendous flashes, maybe a little bit with Rui once in a while.
All right. I know we've seen tremendous flashes from you in your prolific career. You are a busy guy. I got to let you go. Tell everybody where they can find you, what they should be knowing about what Patrick Rui has going on in the world.
Well, a couple of things. You can always, every now and then you can find me in the Washington Post magazine. I contribute longer stories there. You can find me a lot at something called Arizona State University's Global Sport Matters, where I write and also am an editor at large. We cover a lot of sort of outside the line sport and society stuff. We have monthly issues. Check that stuff out for sure. And I also have a newsletter, which is updated not particularly frequently lately because I'm busy, but it's Real Sports at Substack. So H-R-E-A-L Sports. And that's at Substack. You can find my work there. You can find me on Twitter at Patrick_Ruby. And that's a silent H, so it's H-R-U-B-Y. How was that?
Yeah, it's a lot going on, but that's, you know, look, that's good stuff. Patrick's a very good Twitter follow. And as you heard the passion, both on serious topics and nonsense topics, he has things to say and is an important voice out there on all these kinds of topics, including the Washington Wizards. Patrick, we'll have to do this again once the games get going. And, you know, maybe we will meet up with our other conspirators for an adult beverage here at some point.
We'd love to do that. And let me ask you one last thing. What is going on with the Wizards coverage with your shop, with The Athletic? Are you going to be pitching in with that? I know Fred Katz has ascended to Knicks Valhalla, so I'm wondering what's the story there?
I talked about this on the podcast the other day. People were kind enough with the second Fred made his announcement to ask, oh, well, I know you wanted the Wizards job at some point, so I assume you're doing this, to which I was like, no, that ship has sailed. I've moved on. last I've heard, just to be honest, is we're hiring somebody. So that's the good news. Corporate America, or I guess we're not, I don't know. Does The Athletic count as corporate America? I don't know. But in any way, it takes a minute for these things to get going. So I don't know. I don't know where they are in the process. Obviously, the season is starting any minute. The good thing is, at a minimum, we have some guy named David Aldridge
knows a few things about the NBA, right?
right. At a minimum, that, and I'll helping out here, talking about it on the podcast. I don't know. I've suggested that I'm willing to talk about the Wizards weekly if somebody can make it worth my while, internally or externally. So we'll see how that goes. But no, I will. Other than maybe showing up for a game or two to watch and keep my toe into a team I've invested a lot of time in, I will not be transitioning into Wizards coverage, but hopefully we'll get somebody good to do that.
All right. Well, if you need someone to talk about them, I am, again, one of the 10 to 12 people actually watching these preseason games. So happy to come on and give my unfiltered and mostly uninformed thoughts on the franchise.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care.
All right. Wow. Okay. That was a lot. Many thanks to Washington left tackle Charles Leno, to our Chiefs insider Nate Taylor, and to journalist extraordinaire Patrick Ruby for their time. Thanks, of course, everybody here for checking out the podcast, for checking me out on The Athletic, and for hopefully just, being good. Stay strong. There's a lot going on with this team, with the league, the world. It's always a lot happening. I hope everyone is hanging in there. Take care of yourself and love everybody who's in your world. Crazy times. I don't even know what I'm saying. It's been a long one. It's been a long few days. But that's it for now. Ben Standing signing off. Until next time. See ya.
Football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.